Thank you, Professor Lin. Thank you, Professor Wang, for this warm welcome. Thank you for the warm welcome of the audience, distinguished guests, faculty, and students. It's a pleasure to be back in Beijing again after I came here last year to give a talk about the discovery of high-temperature superconductivity and the impact and the outlook for the applications. I don't want to talk about superconductivity today. I want to talk about some activities we perform at the IBM Research Laboratory in Zurich, in Switzerland. Some kind of work which can be regarded as basic science with a long-term perspective, long-term, more than 10 or 15, 20 years for a really new technology. I'm talking about a particular work of some of my colleagues, and I talk about this because I'm proud about their achievement, and I think people need to know that although we are still a strong IT company, the biggest private research institution in this field is still doing some very basic sciences. And very basic science we perform in a lot of different places. Here in red, I marked the original basic science research laboratories of the IBM company. The latest foundation in the 50s was the Zurich lab. So you see with it we are more than 50 years old. And the IBM company will celebrate its centennial next year. So let me spend some moments to describe the Zurich Research Laboratory. Shortly, because I have been asked in the last couple of days about the character of the IBM Research Laboratory in Zurich, the lab population consists out of 320 persons. So from out of these 320 persons, there are 240 permanent regular employees, but the number, the total number of 320 is fluctuating because of there are some temporary collaborators, which are called in the form of pre-docs. This is a number of roughly 50 persons from all over the place in Europe and overseas. And we have a number of postdocs joining the laboratory for 1 or 2 years, together with visiting scientists, more senior people. We have a large number of collaborations with external partners. These are universities. These are also industrial partners. And we are participating in government programs. In government programs, which are National Science Foundation programs, and is also European Union programs. I think one of the specialty of our laboratory, which is located here in the suburbs of Zurich, close to the Lake of Zurich. One of the specialities is that we are a mixture of 300 of more than 30 different nationalities. So this is a multicultural approach, which I think is very fruitful for the successful research we have been conducting in the past. One of the biggest successes in the history of our lab was the development of the scanning tunneling microscope. You see the originators, Dr. Heinrich Rohrer and Dr. Gerd Binnig, good friends of mine, who developed the scanning tunneling microscope, and this instrument provided some information from solid state surfaces at the very beginning, semiconductors and metals, on the atomic scale. The development of the scanning tunneling microscope and later on the atomic force microscope opened a completely new field of science, namely the field of nanoscience. So in that sense, these two gentlemen can be seen as the fathers of nanoscience. Now, this instrument, and I will get to that very soon, enables to get in touch with atoms, not only look at these atoms and characterizing and molecules, but also addresses these atoms and molecules individually. And the instrument provides the possibility to control the position and work with an accuracy down to the picometer scale. This has been regarded as a very important contribution to the field of science and physics, that both gentlemen have been awarded with the Nobel Prize in Physics in 87. This was 1 year prior to the prize which was given to my colleague Alex Müller and myself. Now, we are used to talk about nanotechnology. Now, we have seen nanoscience is evolving, but without knowing about this nanoscience, the technology in the IT industry slowly approached already the nanometer science. So, nanotechnology is nothing new. In the IT industry, nanotechnology is in use. With nanometer size gates for the field effect transistor on high-end microprocessors. You see an example given here from the manufacturing side. Manufacturing is able to produce field effect transistors with a gate length of roughly 20 nanometers. And in research, the dimensions can be down even to lower dimensions. Here we have a gate thickness of the silicon like 7 nanometer and a gate length of 6 nanometer. Layers involved in these devices, insulating layers and metal layers, are approaching the dimension of one or two atomic layers in a total. Now, nanotechnology is nothing new, it's an old technology, and the master of nanotechnology is nature. We see some accidental products obtained by nanotechnology, and this is the feather of a peacock. It's not that the feather is consistent of different parts which are colored, but it's only the reflectance and the absorption of light which is producing these different colors, and these effects are modified by the surface or the microstructure and the nanostructure of these feather particles. So in nature, everything emerges from the nanometer scale and is synthesized to nano, micro, and macro shapes through motions and processes. So nanotechnology will involve motion of individual particles and processes to assemble these. Now another example of the technology, how forces on very small scale could be tremendously high, is these gecko lizard. The legs are composed out of small extensions. Here we have an 8,500 times magnification of these small hairs, which provide the strong adhesion to the surfaces when the lizard is climbing up. So nature should give us the guidance where to go, or could give us the guidance where to go. So this is an accidental discovery, for instance, which could also lead us to a science-based approach. So in science we have to develop new concepts from transistors, which are of the order of 300 nanometer feature size, to nanostructures and molecules even, with a size of smaller than 5 nanometer. And on this scale we can expect new properties and new functionalities to occur. Now you see these beautiful colors in the window of the cathedral in Chartres in France, that colors in ancient times have been obtained in glass by immersing metal particles like gold, producing a very beautiful red color. So nanoparticles can change any physical property. Now the scanning tunneling microscope, as I told you, is providing the possibility of getting in touch with single atoms and moving them around and assembling atoms to form complex structures. Now, one early example has been given by the IBM colleague from Almaden, Don Eiger. At that time, he was playing around. He just made a sign on an atomic scale. This was very famous, where he collected gas particles, xenon particles, to form the logo of IBM. Now he produced a little bit more useful things by getting to the surface of a metal. He used the tip of the scanning tunneling microscope to move atoms in a very controlled way. And here, on top, on the surface of the underlying metal, he produced a ring of iron atoms. And into this ring of iron atoms, he placed a single iron atom in addition. Now, this is his topography, the surface picture. And the surface picture already shows that one can detect the individual iron atoms, but in between this ring, there is some structure to be determined, which is outstanding waves from a 2D electron gas. So these 2D electron gases confined in this lattice. Now, if one does spectroscopy, DIVD spectroscopy on this structure, like a mirror image of this atom, can be detected another position, a symmetrical position to this existing iron atom, which is construct out of the interference through this standing wave pattern. So from this position here, via the electron 2D electron gas, there can be transferred some information to the equivalent symmetrical space in the other part of the ring, although there is no atom existing. So it is a kind of information transfer within the system. And this can be extended if a double elliptic structure is produced from iron atoms, this corral of iron atoms, we can test the DIVD spectroscopy pattern, and we see no irregularity. It's a black background. However, if one iron atom is placed in one part of this structure, like by interference and by reflection on these wave walls, the 2D electron gas below is modified in a way that we get some
additional structure in the equivalent part of the double ellipsoid. This can be tested if the position of the iron atom is changed. So we see this is a real effect just produced by this additional iron. If two iron are placed into this the double elliptic structure, we have the information according to the combination of these two interference patterns. So somehow over the 2D electron gas existing at the surface of metals, we can transfer information. Now, if the structures we use in the electronic industry, in the IT industry, structures producing new electronic devices are shrinking to an atomic level, you better worry about what is going on with single atoms on a surface, or with a combination of single atoms on a surface of a semiconductor or a metal. And I'm going to describe a couple of experiments done by Gerhard Meyer and collaborators. Gerhard Meyer is a very careful and solid scientist who designs and performs a lot of very intriguing experiments with the scanning tunneling microscope, mainly at low temperatures. Here he describes the interaction of atoms with an underlying electron gas. And he started to work with copper atoms on copper 111 surfaces. So he created a structure like a ring and this bar, which is characterizing like a cube. And we see already the presence of this ring of copper atoms is changing the character of the underlying 2D electron gas. He assembled these atoms at 4 Kelvin, and you need to go to low temperatures because otherwise the copper atoms on the surface are diffusing, they are jumping around to find a statistical distribution. They would no longer stay in this way. And then he started the diffusion at 12 to 15 Kelvin. And you see that by going up in temperature, the copper atoms jump around, not in an irregular way, but in a somehow controlled way. And by jumping around, they are also modifying, due to their presence, they are also modifying the structure below, the structure of the 2D electron gas. This is a very weak interaction. Nevertheless, the interaction, the jump wavelength, or the jump length, is half of the Fermi wavelength. It's a regular oscillatory interaction. When this is analyzed very carefully, one can see that there are preferred jump lengths. Now, the diffusion in artificial nanostructures also show a periodic interaction potential. And he calls this experiment the quantum billiard. So what actually is done is the one atom in the center of these two rows is quasi-confined, does not leave this confinement, this cage provided by these two rows of copper oxide. And he does two different experiments while varying the distance between these two copper lines. The copper is trapped in this quantum box of monoatomic rows. And these monoatomic rows, they are providing different diffusion channels, different because of the difference in distance. So the modification of these two lines to the electron gas is changing also the diffusion channels. And if we look at the diffusion of this single atom, it's diffusing only in the center. And here we see the energy distribution in this channel. These both are diffusing adjacent to the monoatomic row, not in the center. And if you look carefully, we see that by diffusing up and down here in this channel, they are also carrying a modification up and down in the underlying electron gas. If one could imagine to have devices acting either as a the atoms disappeared, but it will come back later. We don't have time to wait for this. We can also imagine that this modification by the presence of an atom is kind of information transfer. Or maybe we can, by modifying the electron gas through a current, even move atoms in that way. Who knows? The manipulation seems to be a very important point if it comes to the fabrication of nano devices and nano structures. So there are different ways of modifying or manipulating atoms on the surface of a metal or semiconductor. And there's one way to lateral manipulation, like simply pushing the atom to a different position. There's also the possibility of vertical transfer, which we discussed before, adding a current pulse or voltage pulse, picking up the atom and placing it at another position as a substrate by another voltage pulse. There's also the possibility of simply dissolving, transferring energy to the atom or molecule which is that high that it simply goes off into the vacuum, that it overcomes the adhesion and the binding energy. The dissociation is another way of creating new compounds. Or the synthesis, the formation of new bonds by transferring of energy. And of course, last but not least, the change of conformation, the shape of a molecule. So the basic sample tip interaction mechanisms for an atomic scale modification of surfaces is for the formation of nanostructures, pulling, pushing, and sliding. But you also can provide an electric field like 10 to the 7 to up to 10 to the 8, 10 to the 9 volts per centimeter, and provide enough energy for field evaporation or for field assisted diffusion. And if we apply a high electric current, we can have inelastic tunneling. Or electrovibrational excitation, or even local heating.